Welcome to episode 5 of Kind On Mind, the podcast, where today I'm joined by Miles, a 34-year-old man who's a single father of two little ones under the age of 3 and works as a software engineer. He's originally from Hertfordshire, he spent time living in Bristol, and now he's based in Leicestershire and joins me to talk about his mental health journey and more. Hello there, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, this is my first time on a podcast. I'm quite excited and a bit nervous.
Just treat it like it's a conversation with your mate down the pub. If they were to ask you, at what point do you think you realised that talking about the things on your mind were actually quite helpful?
I definitely was quite late to the party on mental health awareness. I've only recently started therapy a couple of years ago. It was like sort of tail end of the pandemic. I had a bit of a bad time in the pandemic. I think a lot of people did. Obviously, a lot of people were in difficult situations, but I had two children during the pandemic, so that was definitely a challenge.
Wow. You went into the pandemic with two children, or you actually had two children in that time?
No, I had two children in the pandemic. So my son, Louis, was born in October 2020, which was the middle of lockdown two. That was during the time when ordinarily the husband wasn't allowed into the ward during the birth, but I was in Bristol at that time. They made an exception, so I wasn't allowed in. So what was supposed to be a really exciting time was like wrapped up in even more anxiety around like COVID, and like this was pre-vaccine. So I was really worried a lot of the time about Jen, who's my ex-partner, her catching COVID and then like losing the baby. And in the news, there's a lot of stuff around pregnant women being a lot more vulnerable. So that was, yeah, it was a really difficult time. Added to that, the birth was quite a traumatic one. There were some complications in the birth. They thought that Louis' umbilical cord was like twisted and it stopped the blood flow to his body. His heart rate started dropping quite significantly, and they had to like call the emergency button and get all the doctors in to like make decisions. In the end, it was natural birth, but they were gearing up to do a C-section. But yeah, in the end, it happened, but it was 24-hour labour type thing.
So in normal times, like expecting your first child, there's so much natural anxiety going around because the uncertainty, you don't know how the birth's going to pan out. Obviously, you know, your partner is the person that's physically going through it, but you're mentally and emotionally going through it as an expectant father. What is that like? And do you think it's spoken about enough amongst men?
Yeah, I think there's definitely not enough being done for expectant fathers. I think especially around when the pandemic hit, there was no real face-to-face stuff. So we didn't have any like neonatal groups to like attend. So we basically did none of that support group stuff building up to the birth. And then we had like the traumatic birth, and then afterwards we were in lockdown, so we were kind of isolated. Yeah, and if the relationship's not going, like, if you're not really talking to your partner a lot, you kind of end up going a bit within yourself. And I think that's when my mental health started really deteriorating.
They call it internalization, don't they, when you're not speaking?
Yeah.
What are your views on that? What do you think about when we don't speak, if we internalize, like you've just said, like you kind of turn in on yourself? What is that experience like as a man?
Stereotypically, I think that's what men have done. I think I just did it without even thinking about what I was doing. I was like, this is just, I've just got to be strong and just sort of bury all these feelings, these negative feelings, just for the sake of Jen and the kids. And I can't like let this bubble out, because it's obviously a lot of stress for her anyway, like looking after a newborn baby. So yeah, I wish at that time I should have got therapy like a lot sooner, but I think I just thought I could ride it out and I'd be fine. But I think the more you go within yourself, the worse you get.
Definitely. So we've mentioned one child, Louis, and you've got a second one.
Yeah, so Sydney was born 2022 in January. She was basically another COVID baby. It's quite a small gap between the two of them. It's only 15 months. So
oh, is that?
We reckon Jen got pregnant 4 months after Louis was born, which is like the bare minimum amount of time, I think, because we were just like, no, there's no chance like you could be pregnant. Jen was actually 16 weeks before we found out that
oh
she was pregnant.
Oh my god, you're joking.
She actually like showed me a stomach one morning, and she was like, I think I've got like a growth or something in my stomach. And she like laid down and showed me her tummy, and I pressed it, and it felt like a water balloon. I was like, "That's amniotic fluid, and you're pregnant."
Did you actually say that?
Yeah, because you could feel like the fluid like underneath the surface of the skin.
And how did you know that that was the particular type of fluid that was there? Like, are you like?
I was just. It was just obvious because she had a little bump. Like when she laid down, you could just see a little pregnancy bump, and it just felt like, because I remembered it from Louis, like what it felt like.
Going back to your journey with regards to mental health then, and you mentioned that you probably should have got therapy sooner, at what point in your journey did you actually start it?
I think it was shortly after we found out that Jen was pregnant with Sydney. My mental health wasn't very good. I had quite a lot of anxiety. Jen basically was like the catalyst. She just said to me one day, she's like, "You really need to, you're not getting any better. Like, you need to just talk to someone." That first therapist I had wasn't actually very good for my situation, and actually probably made me worse. So I think it's really important, if you get a gut instinct that your therapist is not working for you, like, make sure you stop with that therapist and go to another one, because it's not guaranteed that you're going to get on with that therapist, or they're going to understand your situation properly like they need to.
So for those that are listening to this that have never approached a therapist or a counselling service before, what sort of advice would you give them in finding the right sort? Because I think most people would probably think that any therapist will be a good therapist, and that is kind of how it should be. But actually, I think it's probably important to understand that, like other professions, therapists can specialise in certain fields.
Yeah, I mean, take my example. I was struggling with my sexuality. So I'm out as bisexual now, but in those early days when I was having children, I'd only told Jen like maybe 6 months before we had Louis. And I think you need to be sure that your therapist is kind of clued up on LGBT issues. And I don't think my first therapist was really, and she didn't really help me in those issues very much. I think when you're there's a website called like Counselors Directory or something, and you can filter by like the specialism that you're interested in. When we changed city, I got a new therapist, and I made sure to select therapists who like had been trained in like LGBT issues.
Historically, when we talk about sexuality as a society, it's been really about people thinking that you're gay or you're straight, and there's no in between. But we know that the in-between is bisexuality. What is it like going on the journey to explore your true identity with this understanding that this identity that you are is actually underrepresented and probably misunderstood?
Yeah, I mean, when I was first questioning my sexual identity, I completely overlooked the bisexual term. And when I started having feelings for other guys, I immediately jumped to, "Oh, that makes me gay." And just despite the fact, you know, I've been in relationships with a lot of women, when you're initially like throwing that curveball, I think because of cultural conditioning, that's the first thing you jump to, is like, "Oh, I'm gay." And that's quite scary, and that is bad for mental health, because especially when I was in a straight facing relationship, to be brought up with that binary of gay or straight, I think it just cause a lot more stress than needed to.
Which is really interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of young people now are identifying outside of what have been known of norms. So there's like, you know, higher percentages of children and young people identifying even outside of gay, straight and bisexual, and using other umbrella terms, or some of them choosing to remain labelless altogether.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just say they're sexually fluid these days, which I can kind of identify with that.
Yeah.
Sort of depends on your circle of friends, people you're hanging out with. I think it can vary how you feel.
In the early days of me questioning my sexuality, I very much knew that I was attracted to men as well as women, but felt as though you can't like both. It has to be one or the other, because everyone chooses in the end one or the other. You can't like both. And it took me probably about 4 years for me to have this penny drop moment in therapy where I said, "I can't be gay because I'm attracted to women. I can't be straight because I'm attracted to men.
Yeah.
I must be bisexual." My therapist smiled, because I was like, "Why has this took me so long?" Because we've spoken about these labels, and I've known that bisexuality is a thing. Well, it's like I've known it's a thing, but I've not believed it's a thing. And I think it's something to do with that lack of male bisexual visibility in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely difficult for men, because the stereotype goes that if you come out as bisexual, it's, you know, one stop on the road to gay town.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot
it's
of
a one-way ticket. Never to return.
This is a thing in, I think it came up in Sex and the City when I was reading about it. Yeah. They brought on this kind of stereotype into the public domain, and it's kind of stuck around since then. Like, what was that, 1990s? Yeah. That show came out.
Yeah.
There is an element of truth to that, because when gay people come out, they find it easier, maybe initially, because maybe what people think of them, if they were to come out initially as gay,
yeah,
it's almost like a slightly easier thing to say, you know, I'm bisexual. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it does kind of cement that stereotype.
There also seems to be this narrative sometimes, and I say sometimes because it's a bit of a generalisation what I'm about to say, amongst gay people, but when you are exploring your sexuality, or when you are first identifying as bisexual for the first time in your life, that some gay men will say to you, oh yeah, I used to be like that, and then I came all the way over. Or I'm sure there's like a particular term. It's not bi now, gay later, is it?
I don't know. I've not heard that one.
Have you ever experienced that, where like a gay person has said to you, you know, I was bi and now I'm not? Because I think that goes back to what you were saying about cementing that kind of that outdated narrative that's not very helpful to us, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I have met one gay man. He told me that when he was younger, he was like, he slept with men and women, and now he's in a relationship with a man, and he identifies as gay. So he's almost like, he's taking the relationship he's in and then using that to create his identity. Whereas I don't think young people are really doing that anymore. I think you can still be bi, you know, and be with a man, or be with the same-sex gender. You don't have to use your relationship to get your identity, I think.
I believe that choice of partner doesn't dictate sexuality, and that sounds like what you're saying there. But I wonder if it's easier, if you do fall in love with somebody of the same gender, to say, yeah, I'm gay now. But a frustration that I feel with that is I think, but you're not gay, you're bi. And you are feeding into that thing of that every bisexual eventually picks a side.
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, I think young people these days, I think the numbers of bisexual people is growing, which suggests that more people are just sticking with the bisexual label, rather than doing this kind of bi one day and then gay or lesbian the next.
And just kind of moving along to like other parts of your life, and I'm sure we'll revisit, you know, this topic later on if the conversation goes that way, but you recently moved to a new area where you know nobody locally. What's that been like?
It's been quite difficult. Yeah. So I've met you. You're my only friend around here.
You poor sod. 40 minutes away as well.
Yeah. No, it has been difficult. I guess, I don't know, it is difficult to make friends full stop, like in your 30s.
It is, right, and I have a question. Do you think it's more difficult to make friends as a man?
As a man?
When I moved away to Southampton, I think that it feels as though women befriend each other a lot more easily. So they might have a conversation in the toilet, or they might talk about each other's dress sense or their hair, and then conversations would go from there. It might be over the course of a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but it feels like it'd be quite an organic way of saying, do you want to get a drink? Shall we get our nails done? I don't know if I'm generalising here. I definitely am with certain types of women, but I feel like as a man, you don't rock up to another man in the gym and say, do you want to go for a drink, mate?
I think, yeah, it comes back to this idea of masculinity that we talk about quite a lot,
yeah,
outside of the podcast. I think men keep up this facade of, like, I'm not going to be that guy, because it's a sign of weakness. It's like, I'm in my mid-30s, I should have all my friends like sorted already. For me, it's a sign, it's an act of vulnerability, isn't it, to say, you know, I just moved here, I don't really know anyone, like, do you want to go out for a drink with me?
Yeah.
Please.
It is, isn't it?
So, like, I think that's a blocker. Like, and actually, like, since I've come out, I've found it a bit easier to make friends.
Oh, have you?
because I find that queer men are a bit more, I don't know, it's just easier to break that masculinity barrier.
When you say queer men, what does that mean?
Like men who aren't straight.
Just for context then, you and Jen and the kids lived in Bristol and then you separated.
Yeah.
And Jen moved to Leicestershire, and so you moved to Leicestershire.
Correct, yeah.
To live on your own, but to co-parent your two children under three.
Yeah, so for one, I haven't got a huge amount of time because I'm co-parenting my two babies. I work full-time, so really has been a struggle to like meet other people. And like you say, it's not easy to like just approach someone in the gym. It's just not the environment, really, to make friends. What I have done is used friend mode of Bumble.
Right, how's that worked out for you? Which is quite weird.
So you basically swipe for a friend, like you would for on a dating app.
Please be my friend!
So I've met one nice guy off that. He's moved to the village. We've met up once so far. That could be a nice friendship. He's a gay man. He's married to another man. And they've got a dog. And they're going through the adoption process.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to have potentially a baby to be looking after soon, which is really sweet. So that's nice. I've used Field.
What's that about?
Field is a sex-positive dating app.
My favourite app. What do you think to it?
Yeah, it's good. You can use it all for all sorts. Like, there's people who are polyamorous, so like people who have, for people who don't know, that's when you have like multiple romantic partners at once, and it's kind of an ethical situation where the other person, all your partners, know everything that's going on. There's no secrecy. It's not cheating. So I've been exploring those ideas through talking to people on Field.
How do you find about that whole concept of non-monogamy?
I mean, I've never been in a non-monogamous relationship, but people do it on a single basis. It's called ENM, which means ethical non-monogamy. But you can be a solo ENM.
Can you?
Which I understand it's seeing multiple people at once. But you don't have a primary like nesting partner you live with. You're just basically going to different meets.
Oh, I didn't know whether it was somebody in a relationship, but they're the only one in the relationship in open relationships.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's I could be ENM because I'm not attached to anyone, but I'm saying to the wider audience, I'm not going to be monogamous with you.
So it's single non-monogamy.
It's basically you're free and single and you don't give a fuck, basically.
Sounds like me in the last year. So what I like about Field is that the way I describe it is it's an app where people are just free to be themselves. So you can, identify as whatever gender you like, whatever sexuality. It really opened my eyes up to different sexual identities, actually. So, outside of gay, straight and bisexual, you've got terms like heteroflexible and homoflexible, which I interpret as, so heteroflexible, I interpret that as somebody who is largely heterosexual, but will occasionally be homosexual. However, they're quite binary terms I've just put in there. And actually, whether it's heteroflexible or homoflexible, it's still bisexual, isn't it? So I guess my next question is, going back to the topic of sexuality, is there a reluctance to identify as bisexual? We often have people identify as pansexual, omnisexual, demisexual, and they all sit under the bisexual umbrella, don't they?
I don't think demisexual is bisexual.
Isn't it?
No. Demisexual is where you only have sexual feelings when you're really attached to that other person. So you could be straight and demisexual.
It's hard to follow, isn't it? It's hard to keep up.
There are a lot of
labels, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. I didn't know anything about those labels until Field, and it was a real eye-opener. There seems to be a lot of crossover. Like, there's polysexual and pansexual.
And I think polysexual is basically it's polyamory as a sexuality.
I don't think that's right either. Attraction to multiple genders, but not all. So you could be attracted to men and non-binary people, but not women, for instance.
Do you stick with a sexuality or do you chop and change? And how does that work? So I'm asking this because you know that I've chopped and changed mine.
Yeah, I kind
of feel like there are negative connotations attached to some of them. And I've been known to match with people before that have had their own presumption as to what heteroflexible means, and they've assumed that it means I'm straight and I've never been with a man, and I'm like, well, actually, no, because I'm bi. So you think to yourself, well, why don't you just label yourself as bi then? But then you'll match with somebody else, and they'll be like, oh, which gender do you prefer the most? And I think, oh, this is just...
Yeah.
Get to know me as an individual.
I chop and change. Like, I go between just queer, because I just like to leave a bit of ambiguity there sometimes, because I'm still, like, working it out myself. So, like, it feels a bit final to just settle on bisexual or whatever. I just know I'm not straight. So I quite like that one. But obviously, queer has, like, obviously, the LGBT community have reclaimed that term as a positive.
Yeah.
But historically, it was negative. It was used as an insult. Oh, you're queer. So I don't like that aspect of it. And then, like, yeah, heteroflexible. I'm leaning more towards that one. But I firmly believe I could fall in love with anyone, any gender. So I use, like, biromantic as well if I want to really get... if I really want to go crazy with it.
So just to confirm, biromantic means...
You can fall in love with any gender.
Right, okay.
Have romantic feelings.
I did know that because I've also... heard of it before. We'll just wait for him to drink his drink.
Just drinking a beer.
So going back to what you said about finding the right sort of therapist, and you went to therapy post lockdown and post babies, and you'd mentioned about, I think, one of the motivators for going for therapy was talking about your sexuality. What was your experience with your first therapist with regards to talking about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets quite interesting, because I basically was heavily questioning during that pandemic because we had a lot of time inside just in our own thoughts.
Yeah.
I was struggling with anxiety, health anxiety being one of them, so like being worried about catching COVID, basically. And then I went to the therapist and said, I think I've got an OCD around my sexuality. I always think I'm gay. So I'd be like watching like TV and I'd think, oh, he's quite attractive. And then it would set off a whole flood of anxiety in me, set me on like a couple of hours where I'd just be ruminating about my sexuality. I then like went to the therapist and she said, yeah, you've got OCD.
Yeah.
And sort of confirmed this thing of like, oh, don't actually address your sexuality, we'll just treat the OCD.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was just like not what I needed to be doing, really. What I needed to be doing was, you know, coming to terms with and accepting this as a new part of myself, rather than treating it as a pathology that I could get rid of somehow. Like, you can't get rid of your sexuality.
Was this something that kind of, for you, came out of nowhere? Or do you reflect back on life and think there were a few signs along the way?
Yeah, so it's been an interesting couple of years because I've thought about, like, oh, in like my 20s, did I have, like, sexual feelings for guys then? And I think about it and I think, not really, but I think I was so, like, wrapped up in my identity as being hetero that whenever anything came up, I just, like, blocked it out and buried it.
Yeah.
It was almost like a little drawer in the back of my brain where you just say, that's just going there.
Yeah,
I'm not going to think about that.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because if I was speaking to a woman right now doing this podcast and she spoke to me about questioning her sexuality, she probably wouldn't feel that she ruminated or obsessed or worried in the same way that you have as a man. Do you think that men have the same freedom that women have to explore their identity?
I can only say from my point of view that there's two competing forces in like the male identity. Like there's heterosexuality which goes with masculinity and they're like together and strong. That's
historically.
That's how I viewed it. From the way I was, just the culture that I was living in, like I was born in 1988, growing up in the 90s and noughties, that was just the viewpoint I absorbed. Like gay people were ridiculed. Gay was used as an insult. If you were a bit like girly or wimpy, like if you cried, you were called gay. So they're saying you're not masculine, you're gay. So I think I've always been quite boyish and masculine. So I think to protect that aspect of my identity that I'd built, to then bring in something like bisexuality, it would completely like destroy that masculine side built up. Like, I mean, I played football when I was younger. I had like page 3 pin-ups all over my walls. I was in skateboarding, like new metal, grunge, and like all that boyish music, like from that period. And things like, I know, even like things like little things like Eminem would like rap about. You know, he's quite homophobic in his songs. He actually denies that.
Oh, does
but
he?
I just don't buy it. Sorry.
No. I think that, because, you know, our ages aren't too dissimilar. I'm born in 1990, and it very much was, you know, a case of anything that was seen as less masculine, anyone in touch with their emotions, anyone that, you know, was perceived to be weaker or feminine in any way, you were classed as gay. And like you say, it was used as an insult. And it's so interesting now to think that the narrative has kind of changed quite a bit amongst children and young people, but it's still very much there in adult society, isn't it? And I wonder if it's through the increase of you know, this month is Pride, and like having Pride events that are now not known as gay Pride anymore. They're known as just Pride, and it's a, you know, it's a celebration of the whole community for every letter in the acronym and beyond. But in addition to people that celebrate like Pride events, and the more same-sex couples we have in our communities, and the more same-sex couples that go on to have their own families, they are helping to change the narrative amongst society, because people are able to see that happiness is the priority for people when being able to live their true and most authentic selves. And with masculinity, everything that you've just mentioned there about grunge and skateboarding and football, they're all stereotypes as to what masculinity is. And you can be masculine and very much in touch with your feminine side. I believe that.
Yeah.
But do you think society really does yet?
No, I think men in general have got a way to go. I think boys are still getting wrapped up in stereotypically like masculine things as a way to like prove themselves. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think when you start conflating other things like sexuality with masculinity, that's where it gets a bit toxic, because there's a wide variety of diversity in sexuality, and if you start saying one sexuality is better than the other, that's when people are going to start having mental health issues. And it's no surprise that I think bisexual people have the most cases of mental health issues out of all the labels.
Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of people hide it because maybe they can be with it in a straight-facing relationship, but they're still hiding an aspect of themselves, maybe. Sometimes from their partner, sometimes from everyone. So yeah, I think there's a way to go. I mean, I still see like homophobia in like Instagram comments and things like that. It's not like by no means gone.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because in a straight facing relationship, which, just to confirm for those that are listening, that's somebody that is in a relationship with somebody of the opposite gender, we may look at them and think that that's a straight relationship, but actually we don't know whether there is or not, because there could be one person within that relationship that is happily bisexual and their partner loves them for that part of their sexuality. And it's interesting, isn't it, that something that I have often not battled with but wondered over the years is that you do have people as part of the LGBT plus community encouraging you to come out, which is a term I absolutely hate, but to come out and be out and proud, as though to suggest that you can't be in and proud. There must be people in straight-facing relationships across the world who recognise their bisexuality with their partners of the opposite sex and are loved for who they are, but don't feel the need to wave the flags that the rest of us can do in the community. It's quite an interesting concept, isn't it? Because by being in one of those couples, they must pick up on biphobia and homophobia all the time. Because you do often find that, I'm generalising here, but straight people can speak to straight people and mention bits about those communities when actually you're thinking, well, you don't know this about me.
I mean, I think definitely some people are able to deal with it better than others. I think some people like benefit from like coming out and telling the whole world, and it's psychologically quite healing, I think.
Yeah.
If you've been hiding something for so long, and then to be like, this is me, I'm happy with myself.
And that was your experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought, so I went to my first Pride last year and I thought it was really healing. Just everyone, just being completely who they are.
You met this guy on Bumble for making friends. You're on apps to do with dating as well. What's dating like for you?
I don't like the modern dating world.
No? Why ever not?
Who does, actually? Has anyone
fucking awful.
That? Has anyone ever said that on a podcast? I love online dating.
Oh, God. Probably people that have no idea what it's actually like.
I don't like this. The worst thing about it is how easy it is to reject someone.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to... Like, back in the day, you would have had to have... Say you went on a couple of dates face-to-face. You either would have had to call them and say, I don't want to see you anymore. Or you would have had to wait for another date. And then you had to have the balls to say to them face-to-face, yeah. I don't think this is working. Here's why. Whatever. In the modern world, it's so easy to reject people.
Yeah.
Most common one, it seems to be, is ghosting. As I've experienced this week.
Have you?
Yeah.
How many times?
At least three.
Really? Three this week?
Three no. Ghosts this week.
Three?
Yeah.
This week?
Pretty sure, yeah.
I thought it was two.
It's about... I've lost count, guys.
You're getting quite frustrated with it as well, aren't you?
This is going to sound really manosphere, but I don't like the fact that women have, like, impeccable photos, and then when you meet them, they just don't look like their photos. And you had this experience as well.
Did I?
Maybe not. Maybe that was another guy called Stephen, I know.
Yes, I did once have this experience. Yeah, you're right there. It's difficult, isn't it? Because, we call it catfishing. I don't know if I believe that anyone sets out to trick somebody to go on a date, but I do think there is this culture that we have of people either editing their pictures or using pictures from 3 years ago, and then you meet this person and it's like, oh my gosh, you don't look anything like your pictures. And are we right to feel deceived? Is it not about the person? Can we not make a emotional connection with these people, and then can attraction come from that? Or is it a case of, yeah, we've been deceived and this is wrong and you should have been more upfront from the start?
I think I'm guilty of the fact that maybe, probably should have given these people more of a chance. If you were to, like, give your number to someone in real life, that's quite a step. So you'd hope you'd be really physically attracted to them in that moment. Mm. Like, I did it with my ex. Like, I'd never done that in my life. So, like, I was to me that I was really attracted to her.
Yeah.
So, like, it is important.
Massively. When I was off social media, I had a piece of paper in the back of my phone with my number on and one in my wallet as well. And I gave that out a few times. And I think it's actually more of a compliment in this day and age, because it's like, you're saying, I really like the look of you that much that I want to give you my number.
Yeah.
And I actually did it at an event in February. And she didn't text me back. I asked her if I could give her my number.
Has that made you stop doing it now? Or do you still do it?
Well, I've been back on social media again for some time, and I don't like online dating, and I dip in and out of it, but I'm kind of on it to... I guess I'm just kind of on it because I don't want to avoid it. In answer to your question, has it discouraged me from doing it? No, I don't think so, because I was quite nervous about doing it at this event, and I thought, for God's sake, Stephen, like, you could be sat married to this person in 15 years thinking, thank fuck I did that. Like, you've got absolutely nothing to lose. Yeah, okay, I wanted the ground to swallow me up because all of her friends turned away and laughed. But even though she didn't text me back, she went to bed that night with a compliment that somebody thought that she was so attractive that he wanted to give you his number. And so, you give out good in the world, you might get it back, you might not.
Yeah, and also, from a personal development perspective, you need to, like, get used to taking the odd bit of rejection. I think that's the other thing in the dating market when it's online, is you don't see the rejections. You swipe.
Yeah.
You only see the people that like you, don't you? You don't see all the people that swipe no to you.
Well, unless you're on Bumble and then the female lets it time out after 24 hours.
That's demoralising, isn't it?
It's just awful. Like, Hinge is my... Field is obviously my favourite. Hinge is my second favourite. Obviously, we're talking about matches right now. We've spoken about bisexuality as well. We've spoken about Field. What's your views on polyamory and ethical non-monogamy, like we've just discussed, in terms of what does that mean for you, Miles? Are you actively pursuing polyamory?
I've questioned whether monogamy is for me. In the past, I have felt a little bit trapped in monogamous relationships. Not in regards to I want to sleep with loads of people, but in the regard of I'm quite a loving person. When I make friendships, I express love through like touch, and I like that as part of my friendships. So
yeah,
I mean, depending on the person I was in a relationship with, if they couldn't accept that, I think I'd feel like I was having to dilute who I was as a person. And I think in polyamory you can have relationships which fulfill different aspects of yourself that maybe you feel like you psychologically need.
Yeah.
Take, for example, someone, they have a primary nesting partner who they're in love with, but maybe they have another partner who they have a very strong physical connection with, and that can be a possible situation. I mean, yeah, that's an ideal.
Are open relationships sustainable?
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know either. I think people seem to make it work. If you think about Open House, the Great Sex Experiment, there are, you know, what they call sexually liberated single people on there who it seems to work for. And I think if it can work for you and you're happy with that, then yeah. Lots of people will say, I couldn't have an open relationship because I get too jealous. Not me personally. They'll say that themselves. I genuinely believe, despite the fact that my friends will say, I don't think you're polyamorous, while I largely agree with them, actually, I believe that if I was in a loving relationship with somebody who gave me freedom to be who I am in my own identity, just outside of sexuality, but like who I am as a person, and I give them that as well, then why can't you welcome thirds, fourths, and fifths? As long as everybody's playing it safe and doing their sexual health checks, what's the problem with it? But it is complicated, isn't it?
I think the people that make it work, they have quite a strict rule set. Like, I think some couples decide to open things up, but they don't allow, like, consistent partners because the emotional ties come into it then. Unless they, like, find a way to deal with, like, that. But that's when it obviously gets a bit more complicated. If you've got two emotional, really strong emotional connections, or three, or whatever, because you'd feel, you know, that jealousy would definitely be a factor. But if you're someone that can disconnect sex from emotion, maybe that's okay just to have like a casual hookup outside the relationship.
Polyamory is a whole concept that could be an episode on its own, and there's all sorts of different like roles that you can play in it, and unicorn is one that's often quite known, which is a single person that joins a couple to be a third. How difficult do you find that it is in terms of balancing people's emotions and sexual needs and what they want in a partner? My experience has been that it's I don't know why I'm surprised to realise that dating two people is more complicated than one. Like, why does that surprise me? I have no idea. It's like, Stephen, are you really that naive?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a fairly interesting unicorn story, if you want me to get into that. Yeah, I mean, probably too soon after my previous relationship broke down, and I was a bit emotionally sensitive still, but...
What, you mean you're not now? You can call me a prick, it's fine.
Yeah, so I kind of got into this complicated, like, throuple situation with another couple. They were due to be married. We went on about three dates together, maybe four.
Yeah. And this was a male-female couple.
It's a male and female. Initially, it was really fun, exciting. They were, like, really... They both seemed to be really on the same page, happy with how things were going. But as things progressed, I started feeling like a little bit emotionally attached to both of them.
Oh, wow.
And I felt like when I was texting one of them, I felt like the other one was being excluded.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, now I feel like bad, because like, does she feel left out or does he feel left out? Because yeah. I'm not talking to them both at the same time. But I wanted to like build a connection with them individually as well. So that was complicated. And then when, also to add to that, when they were together and they didn't like invite me along, like, I felt jealous. And I'm just the third. So like, can you imagine what they felt like when, like, I don't know, say when I was kissing her and he was watching? Like, yeah. It must have been quite strange.
But some people like that, don't they? Some people like that. Is it called voyeur? Voyeurism? That's where you like watching your partner, seeing your partner with another person, isn't it?
I think that's, yeah, it's more of a sexual thing. But some people, I guess, think, oh, maybe she's happy, that's good.
So, when it comes to, like, gender, can men and women just be friends?
That's a bit of a tangent.
Hear me out here. Can men and women just be friends?
Yeah, of course.
Can they?
Yeah, I believe so. Why? Do you think...
Do you think that two men can just be friends?
Yeah,
seems like quite a straightforward answer, doesn't it? Because obviously, you know, when you grow up, you know, boys are friends with boys and girls are friends with girls.
One of my best friends growing up was a girl.
Oh, was she?
And it was, I always thought it was platonic.
Yeah.
For like the majority of the relationship.
Yeah.
It was only like when I was sort of 17 and still a virgin. And I was like, maybe I could just lose my virginity to her.
Did you?
No. No, it took me to, I went to university to do that. But yeah, it was always platonic, and I never saw her in a sexual way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely believe that.
So platonic friendships are definitely a thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
What about two bisexual men? Can they be friends?
Same thing.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Completely, 100%.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Can two gay men just be friends?
Course. This, yeah, I think there's this where you're getting at the stereotype.
Yeah, the stereotype is that when
gay men, like the fact that a straight man's like, oh, he might fancy me or
yeah,
whatever, like no.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty picky and I definitely don't like you.
There's a t-shirt, isn't there? Bisexual and still not into you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the point that I was getting at there is that we often think in society that, you know, if two gay people are gay, that they're gay together. Or if two bi people are bi, that they're bi together.
Yeah.
I was about to say that we don't look at all straight people and assume that of the opposite sex they're together, but actually I think a lot of people do. I've got a lot of female friends, and I have known over time people will assume that there's something going on with me and them. And the majority of my female friends who have had boyfriends have often, unfortunately, always had a bit of a problem with me. Seeing me as a threat, it would seem, but then they will question whether I'm gay or not, and it took actually...
That would make them feel better, wouldn't it?
Well, it would make them feel better, and it took actually for my therapist to say, a couple of years ago actually, she said they can't think that you're gay, because they see you as a threat and they're acting as though you're a threat. So they need to convince themselves that you're gay for you to be friends with their girlfriend. So that feels very complicated, right? But you're bi, I'm bi, and this is a platonic friendship. Do you feel like they're, you know, whether it be me and you or other bi men that are friends with each other, do you think, I guess maybe it's outside of sexuality, do you think there feels like this need to justify what friendships are in a time now where a lot of young people and more and more like people our age and older are identifying outside of what used to be known as norm?
I think it's definitely something that people don't value enough.
Definitely not.
I think that's something I've had to learn, like when I've come out of this long-term relationship, is that in that relationship, you know, your partner is your best friend, and sometimes you neglect other connections. That's definitely something I did. But then since I've been living here and by myself, I've been like thinking, wow, like just to have a few friends, that's just so important to my life right now.
Definitely.
And yeah, I've really like tried to nourish the friendships I have.
So it feels like that last point is a top tip in itself, but I will ask you before we finish our conversation, mm-hmm. Can you give three top tips for someone in your position on improving their mental health and well-being?
I am big on physical stuff you can do to make yourself feel good. So, like, in terms of, like, your neurochemistry in your brain, so, like, serotonin levels, dopamine. So I have a morning routine. I get up at the same time every morning, which really, like, dials in your circadian clock. I get up at 6 a.m. and within 20 minutes of waking, go outside and get some sunlight in your eyes. That's, like, number one. I work out 3 or 4 times a week. So I do kickboxing, which is great for getting out some pent-up aggression. And I go to the gym, lift weights and do cardio, which is great for, like, endorphins and serotonin. And then I'd say sleep, make sure you're sleeping enough. They call it sleep hygiene. So, like, an hour before bed, like, put your phone away. Don't look at the glare of the screen. And just try and, like, just do read a book or, like, meditate or do something that's not to do with technology.
And you're quite routine orientated. You like lists as well. So you're quite good at doing this and sticking to it, aren't you? Do you think that's a thing in terms of maintaining your well-being?
I'm quite goal oriented, so I feel like I need to feel like I'm getting somewhere and progressing. So, like, giving myself little goals for the week and then making sure I'm accountable at the end of the week by, like, ticking off those goals.
Yeah.
If you have to tick across against a goal, do it, and then the next week you're not going to do it because it makes you feel shit. So it's quite militant, but that's how I roll.
So that concludes today's conversation. Thank you very much, Miles. How did you find it?
Great. Thank you. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a good, like, roundup of everything. Especially, like, obviously we've been friends for a few months. I think we really got into a bit more detail on some of that stuff.
Definitely did. I learned things that I didn't know before.
Yeah, thanks, mate. That was really good.